Let's pray, Lord. Thank you for this morning. Thank you for bringing us here together. Thank you for the privilege you've given us to be able to understand you because we can understand your word. I pray that you'd help us this morning as we dig into what might appear difficult, that you'd help it to make sense for us, that we'd understand your heart for your people, your desire for being worshiped again as you stipulate, not as we stipulate. I pray you'd help us to bend ourselves to your word rather than bend your word to meet ourselves. Thank you for just the work you're doing in lives of folks in our church. I pray that you would continue to strengthen those who need to be strengthened. I pray especially for Jim Davidson this morning, that you would restore him to health, that you would allow his situation to improve, that he would be able to move to a regular room even today, and if possible, be able to come home soon. Thank you for just, again, being actively involved in our lives. We ask this in your name, amen. All right, Leviticus chapter 19 is where we are. Working through this section of chapter 19, which really is just a list of kind of just some miscellaneous laws of how you're supposed to be, how you're supposed to respond to God. We've made our way to verse 19, and we're going to spend a little time here this morning because I think oftentimes this is a misunderstood section for the Jews because it feels like, wow, you can't even do that? What is this all about? So we're going to spend some time in verse 19. 19 says, "You shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle breed with a different kind. You shall not sow your field with two kinds of seed, nor shall you wear a garment of cloth made of two kinds of material." So this is, in your notes I have, these are forbidden mixtures, if you will, forbidden mixtures. Because he lists three specific forbidden mixtures here that you're not supposed to mix. The first is, in the words of the ESV, not breed your cattle with a different kind. Second is sow your field with two kinds of seed. The third is not wear a garment of cloth made of two kinds of material. There is a parallel passage in Deuteronomy chapter 22. So if you would, it'd probably be good for you to turn to Deuteronomy 22 because we're going to look at that passage as well. Deuteronomy 22, as Moses is given the law for the second time, that's what Deuteronomy is. Deuteronomy is the second law. The first generation, because of something that happens in Numbers chapter 13, the first generation is going to die out in the wilderness, every one of them except for Joshua and Caleb, are going to die in the wilderness. As they get to being ready to enter the law, Moses then gives the law to the new generation. So it's the second law given for the first time to that new generation. And as he's doing that, he makes his way to chapter 22, verses 9 through 11. And it says this, "You shall not sow your vineyard with two kinds of seed, lest the whole yield be forfeited, the crop that you have sown and the yield of the vineyard. You shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together. You shall not wear cloth of wool and linen mixed together." So that's the parallel passage. And you see two kind of fit really closely. Two are almost just restatements, but some definition, right? And the one was you will not plow, how does he say it in Leviticus? You'll not sow your field with two kinds of seeds. In Deuteronomy, he says, the first one is you'll not plant your vineyard with two kinds of seeds, and he also talks about the crop there. So there's a clear parallel between those two. The second parallel is not wear a garment of cloth made of two kinds of material. Again, he says you don't mix in Deuteronomy. You don't mix linen and wool together. And then the third is it doesn't seem to be a match, a parallel. It seems like there's a difference here. In Deuteronomy, it appears he's saying, you don't mix animals as you're plowing. You don't mix animals as you're on a yoke. But in Leviticus, it appears he's saying, by a reading of the English translation, it appears he's saying you don't mate different kinds of animals. That seems to be the prohibition. If you read this section, I have four other translations that I looked at. If you read four other translations of this, the NIV says you'll not mate different kinds of animals. It's real specific, a real general application. You'll not mate different kinds of animals. The problem with that is The problem with that is there was no prohibition against mating a horse and a donkey and having a mule. There was no prohibition for that. In fact, mules were used. Mules were had in Israel, and there was no prohibition against that. So if you take this broadly to understand that this word is you'll not mate, you won't mate different kinds of animals, then a mule would be a violation of that law. And there's no indication that a mule is ever considered to be a violation of the law. The New King James says you'll not have your livestock breed with another kind. You shall not have your livestock breed with another kind. And again, it's a general understanding of the word livestock there. It's not just one or the other, but it has the idea of those, like any breeding stock you may have, any farm animal you may have, you're not supposed to breed with different kinds. That's what it reads together. It reads, the New American Standard says you're not breed together two kinds of cattle. Okay? There's a problem with that. The problem with that is when you talk about kinds, there's a specific understanding of the word kind in the Old Testament. And cattle would be a kind. Just like dog would be a kind, cat would be a kind. So kind is a specific word, and it kind of refers to what we as in our classification system, kingdom, phylum, gender, order, family, species, that whole deal. King Philip came over from Germany sometimes. If you ever had biology class, you know what I just did. I just did the classification system. So it would be like the family would be the kind. It would be that would be everything that was in that family, if you will, would be a kind, like the elephant kind, the hippopotamus kind. Everything that has the same basic DNA, the same basic genetic pattern would be kind of a kind. Well, if cattle are cattle, how do you breed a different kind of cattle with cattle? That's hard to get to. And the kind is a very specific word. The idea, the word is very specific. You'd have another kind of cow. So some suggest that's what he's doing here. Is he's saying that the cattle they brought from Egypt were a really good, fine kind of cattle, and you weren't supposed to breed them with another kind of cattle and somehow diminish the breed. Well, the problem with that is they're still cattle. They're still of the cattle kind. So that doesn't seem to fit. In the KJV, it says your cattle shall not reproduce with another kind. So that is an indication of maybe you shouldn't take your cattle, your cow, or your bull and meet and breed that with a dog. So you have a dog cow or whatever you wouldn't have some, that's what's being said. Those are all difficult. Those are all difficult understandings of this passage, and so I don't think so let's look at the Hebrew words a little bit. Now, I need to full disclosure, I am not a Hebrew scholar. I'm not even the son of a Hebrew scholar. I don't know any Hebrew scholars personally, but I do read, and I did some reading on this subject because I wanted to understand this, especially with the nuanced difference between this text and Deuteronomy 22. I wanted to see what's going on here. Well, so there's a couple things. First of all, the word that's translated cattle is, and Ron's got his magic book up there already. So it's the word behemoth. It's the word behemoth. And that word never refers to horses in the New Testament. It never or in the Old Testament, never refers to horses. It always refers to something other than a horse. More than likely, it is referring to beasts of burden. If you understand where is the description given to us of the behemoth in the Old Testament? Where do we get a description of a Job, right? And Job describes a behemoth as this huge animal. You know, a tail like a cedar tree, oak tree, a huge animal is what this behemoth is described as. Behemoth can also be referred to as a beast of burden. So what we might be referring to here is, rather than thinking of all kinds of livestock, it would be the beasts of burden that you have, the beasts of burden that are there. So to hone this down, I don't think he's talking about all different kinds of, I don't think he's saying no mixing of like black sheep or different kinds of goats or anything. I don't think that's what he's saying at all. I think he's being very specific in talking about the beasts of burden. Okay, and I think it's important that we get that. Yeah, go ahead, Chris. Okay, you can stop anytime you're ready. So what you just heard out of Chris's mouth, disregard, and we'll get there in just a few seconds. Okay, So anyway, we're going to get to why here in a second, but I want to understand this particular prohibition as I think it intended to be understood. All right. But it's important that we get to the why. So I'm not saying we need to, we'll get to what Chris said, because that's important to understand the why. But I'm working on the what right now. Okay, I'm working on the what. And the what is, so we're talking about, I believe we're talking about beasts of burden. And this isn't a only Brian held view. This is an orthodox view held by other folks. It's a beast of burden. When he says we do not let your cattle breed with a different kind, the word breed is also a word that is in Hebrew, and it never refers to, at least the reading I did, it says it never refers to copulation. It never refers to a breeding of to make a new animal. That's not what this word ever means. It's more of a mix together, so you won't mix. The idea here would be you don't mix your beasts of burden. And if you understand, if you read this as, you shall not mix your beasts of burden, then that fits exactly in with what's said in Deuteronomy chapter 22. That's an exact parallel with what's said in Deuteronomy chapter 22, where you won't unequally yoke. Where you won't yoke your beasts of burden. Why would you not do that? Well, if you have a strong, strong ox on one side and you have a less strong animal on the other side that are trying to plow together, you will break down. You will injure the weaker animal will be injured. It'll be torn down. This this idea is taught in Deuteronomy chapter 22. I believe it fits here if you take time to get into what the Hebrew words really indicate, really mean, and what they don't mean, and what they don't mean. Now, having said that, most of the scholars who translated the Bible from Hebrew to English are a lot smarter than me, and they chose this translation for a reason and for a purpose. So it might be, it may be that it actually, that's a better reading, is you shall not let your cattle breed with a different kind. What I'm trying to do is to take this text, marry it with the text in Deuteronomy, and say, so how do those things fit together? And clearly, in Deuteronomy, the teaching is very clear by the words Moses uses. And I think sometimes you have to let the Bible help interpret the Bible. So if Moses, and what Moses is doing in Deuteronomy 22 is listing miscellaneous and various laws. What is he doing in Leviticus 19? He's listing various miscellaneous laws. He's going through some miscellaneous laws. When he gets to the forbidden mixtures, He says, don't mix, don't sow your seed, different seed in a field. Don't mix wool and linen, and don't unequally yoke your oxen together or your beasts of burden together. It feels to me like it fits here when he says that, because there are some issues. Again, don't let your cattle breed with a different kind. Well, if you're just talking about trying to keep the breed pure that came from Egypt, you're still got a kind and a kind. They're both cattle kinds. They're both cattle kinds. So that doesn't, the word kind there doesn't seem to fit for me. But if you do have a weaker cow and a stronger ox, and you're trying to push those things together on a yoke, that does make sense of why that could be an issue. So I'm not going to get wrapped around the axle on that one. I'm just trying to walk through the things that I walk through when I'm studying something. Yeah, Ron? Okay.
That was a problem in America for a long time, in the American West, mm-hmm. that cattlemen hated sheep herders because the sheep would come in and overgraze the cattle land. Yep. So I'm not...
I get what you're saying. In a nutshell, what Ron said is, I'm wrong. No. I know he didn't say that. He didn't say that at all. He didn't say that at all. He's trying to. He was offering a different view, a different understanding of the don't mix. That, and so I don't disagree with that. But he did say it's dangerous to do the parallel because Leviticus is given on the mountain as they're getting ready to wander. Deuteronomy is given, and he said, I don't think they're plowing. Well, I don't think they're planting fields either. So. And clearly the planting field is a planting field reference. So I think you can be safe in seeing these two as parallel.
Well, they do read so parallel.
Yeah.
They probably are. I'm just saying
yeah.
It's a bit speculative.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Clearly what we have here is a bit of speculation and an attempt to understand. But I think it's safe to say what God is prohibiting here is not the mixing of or the breeding, interbreeding different kinds. I don't think that's what's being talked about. I think it's rather a mixture of either, and I can definitely agree, either it, while you're letting your animals graze, don't let your sheep graze with your cows, or I think this is supported not only by Deuteronomy, I think is also supported by Paul in 2 Corinthians 6:14, where he talks about not being unequally yoked together. This seems to be a thought that is a prohibited practice, not only for the Jews in Leviticus and for the Jews in Deuteronomy, but for Christians, even in the New Testament, when Paul says in 2 Corinthians 6:14, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. And I think that kind of thought drives through there. So again, that is an attempt to understand what is being said and how it fits with the other passage in Deuteronomy. So that's what that is. So hopefully we didn't beat that in the head too much. The question is, The question is, why? Why does it matter? Well, if you take either one of the, either Ron's understanding, which is a good one, I'll give him that, it's a good one, or mine, which is don't let, you know, don't equally, what's the point? But better yet, so I can give you a reason. So it'll break down the weaker animal if you unequally yoke them together. Or if you let them graze together in the same field, the sheep will chew that ground, that chew that grass down so low that a cow, that cattle can't eat it. That's why in the American West, sheep herders were despised. When people tried to bring sheep in, they were despised. And that's why if you're driving somewhere, rarely, if ever, will you see sheep in a field with cattle. Because if you see sheep in a field with cattle, you'll see dead cattle. Unless the farmer's actually giving them, offsetting their feed with hay. Because my understanding of sheep is they're not terribly smart. And so rather than going from one place to another to find green pastures, they will just stay right where they are, and they will eat that ground to the dirt and then sit there and die because there's no grass left. That's why the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. That's the whole idea, is he's leading them to green pastures. So that's understandable. In a sense, but the question: so why is that? Why is the field plowing thing or the field sowing thing, and why is the, better yet, why is this mixing of garments? Well, I could suggest that when you mix linen and wool, if you wash them together, your garment, while it looked really nice when you made it, the first time it comes out of, after, and they didn't have washing machines, right? They didn't have dryers. They didn't have a, so that didn't happen. They had to hang it up. But even after you wash wool and linen together, they're going to shrink up differently. It's going to look terrible. But I don't think that's what's going on here. I think Chris actually nailed that whole thing. This is, I think, a prohibition against, because we're actually going to be working our way toward that as we work our way through the rest of Leviticus 19, I think this is an introduction to prohibiting pagan practices. What they're going to do as they get into the land, they're going to see things. They're going to see things they've never seen before. They're going to see stuff going on that's never been happened. They're going to see, and so what is being done here, I believe God is doing, is setting them up for that they won't participate in, and they'll be different from those practices they're going to see when they get in the land. I think that's what it's all about. There are clearly, some things that were going to go on in the land that they were prohibited from doing, and I think that each one of these three were things that were being done by those in the land already, and God wants them to be different. He wants them to be holy. He doesn't want them to participate in that. He wants purity, and he wants purity in their livestock. He wants purity in their clothing, and he wants purity in their fields. He wants them to be different, and so he calls those three areas. Mike Hines. Good. So that being said, if that's the case, is it okay for us to wear linen and wool together? As long as the wool's pre-shrunk, yeah. Very appropriate. Yeah, Ron?
swear two different kinds of cloth together, then you've got to kill your brother. That's what Christianity's all about.
Yeah.
And so I've done a lot of research on that subject because of that fact. It's called the Law of Shatnez. And like you're about to say, it has to do with those pagan practices. That's been the Jewish understanding since Maimonides long, long ago.
Yeah. So this, the short answer to what I just asked, should we be prohibited from mixing wool and linen? The short answer is no. No. But I think there is a principle that applies. And what was the idea behind the law? What was the principle behind these things? The principle was that they would be separate from the people they were going into the land to be in. There was an exhortation and a law that they were supposed to be separate. They weren't supposed to be like the people they were around. I think 2 Corinthians 6:14 is the New Testament application of this law for believers. Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. What's that mean? What's Paul saying? We shouldn't marry an unbeliever. Well, no, that's not really what he's saying there. Sorry. I don't think you ought to marry an unbeliever. In fact, if you come to me and I'm going to be doing a wedding here on July 7th, and I tentatively told them, yes, I'll do it, but I actually didn't actually sign up to do it until May 20th, when I heard both of their testimonies and confirmed that both of them were really believers. I'd heard about them. I know one of them really. I've known one of them since he was born. I don't know the other one very well. And so I needed to hear her testimony before I would say, yes, I'll do this. Because I don't marry a believer to an unbeliever. I won't do that. But not based on 2 Corinthians 6:14. 2 Corinthians 6:14, if you look at what he's talking about, he's really defining really business relationships together. That's what's being talked about is it's going into business with and being a party in a contract with an unbeliever. That's kind of what he's talking about there. And so I think the principle here is we shouldn't unequally yoke ourselves. We should be separate. We should be different from the world around us. I think that's a principle that's clearly taught. 1 John, don't love the world or the things in the world. All that's in the world, it's not of God, but is of the devil. There should be separate. Even Peter in 1 Peter calls us to be holy as he is holy. There is a separateness that we are called to. We are called to look different. That doesn't mean we have to shave our head differently or we have to wear different clothes or we have this, you know, that's not what's being talked about. But I do believe there's a separateness. There is a distinction between those who believe and those who don't believe, and we ought to be separate. But I don't think that we're called to not mix linen and wool. Go ahead, Dave. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm not sure that that's the same principle that's applied in the New Testament. I don't think that we should say separateness for separate sake. It's separateness for the sake of the holiness of God.
Absolutely. And so your first statement, I would agree with 85%, but I would add 15% to that and say there is an aspect of even the separateness for separateness sake was separateness for the holiness of God. Even that was the case. Yes, they were supposed to be separate so they could be separate and other people would see them as separate, but their separateness was never about their separateness. It was always about the holiness of God and to draw others to that holiness. So yes, your statement was almost right, but not quite. But I think it's the same. Ultimately, it's the same exact reason altogether. It's all about the holiness of God and elevating him to where he is and making him not profane. making him special, making him glorified, making him majestic, and magnifying him. You know, one of the Psalms I preached a while back was that thanksgiving magnifies God. Really? How can God get any bigger? How can thanksgiving, how can praising God make God any bigger? That's not what magnification does. Yeah, I think so too, but I said it right. I said it very much more clearly. Because I'm the teacher. Magnification doesn't make the object bigger. It makes it more clearly seen. When you take a telescope and you look at Jupiter, right? Jupiter hasn't suddenly grown. Jupiter's always been that big. You just see it more clearly. When you take a microscope and you look at a cell on a slide, and you look in that microscope, you don't make the cell itself grow bigger. No, the cell is the same size. All you do is you see it more clearly. That's what magnification does. And I think the separateness of the Jews when they got in the land, and as they're going to the land, the separateness, the holiness for them is designed to magnify God. It is absolutely designed to magnify God so that the Jews would be a city on a hill, and so that when the people saw, when other nations saw Israel doing what Israel did and being separate, they would be drawn to that God and away from their own. That's the point. That's the point. I'll get you in a second, Steve. The other thing I would suggest is, you know, we've talked about this being on the mountain before wandering. Remember, they weren't supposed to wander. It wasn't a plan. On Leviticus 19, it was not a plan for them to wait 40 years to get in the land. It was 11 days. It's an 11-day trip from Sinai to Kadesh Barnea. It's 11 days. They were supposed to enter the land in 2 weeks. Wandering wasn't in mind, I don't believe. Well, not in. I don't think he gave a law. Say, well, I know you're going to wander, so let me go ahead and give you, since you're going to anyway, let me do this. It was 11 days. Go ahead, Steve.
In my small brain, at the practical level, what I'm hearing, I want to make sure you're right. Unequally yoked, 2 Corinthians. Are you saying that a Christian shouldn't be doing business with non-Christians? Or is that just taking it too far?
No.
You're a practical businessman, and Google, I'm making it up, you have to do business through that. Are you saying you don't do that?
I don't think that's necessarily wrong. I was going to go to 2 Corinthians. I was actually going to work at that. So I think the idea is not to entangle yourself in a situation with an unbeliever that's going to get you tied down and cause you to be, your focus to be taken away and get you into a situation where you're doing things that you ought not to be doing. You're participating in practices that are not separate. So, you know, let's
like a bank. You got a business and you're doing payroll every week.
Yeah.
And they may be Jewish, I don't know.
I don't think that's a problem. I think the idea here is like if I was to boil this down into 3 or 4 things, I'll just give one. It would be like I shouldn't be a stockholder in a company that's I'm going to get myself in trouble because I'm going to, for me, all right, for me, because they're doing so well. That's not where I'm going to go. I was thinking of, I'm going to get myself in trouble. Not sales ladders. Ladders are, some people need ladders because I don't want to get on them. So somebody needs to get up there on those things. Let's say a tobacco company, all right? And if you use tobacco and you don't think it's a sin, all right, I do. For me, it would be absolutely a sin to smoke or chew tobacco. I don't smoke and I don't chew and I don't go with girls that do. So You know, why would you ever kiss a girl with tobacco in her mouth? I don't get that one. And why would she ever kiss me? So for me, it would be wrong for me to hold even a mutual fund that had Philip Morris stock in it. That's kind of what I'm talking about. Because what I'm doing then is I am in line with and participating with someone who is profiting from, and now I am profiting from what I believe somebody else is doing to sin. That's not being separate. That's not being separate. That's what I'm saying. So let me put it in a nutshell. For us in the New Testament, any relationship, any contractual relationship that's going to cause us to not be separate from the world is something we ought to avoid. That's that simple. It's something we ought to avoid. Yeah, go ahead, Dave. Yeah, that's good. That's a good observation. Good observation. So what he's saying basically is, shut up, Brian, let's go on. I'm really good with that. Let's shut up and go on. No, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. And so what Dave is saying is true. God doesn't give them the why. He said that God doesn't give them the why. He just expected them to obey. I totally get that. I totally understand that. But I think it's important sometimes for us to try to figure the why out. And I don't think this is a wasted effort. And if you do, I'm sorry. I don't think this is a wasted effort, because sometimes the why helps motivate me to obedience. And I think why is important, because why does help us. It's a motivation. Do I expect my children to understand when I told them to do something, yes or no, do it? I expected obedience. But obedience came easier when I could explain to them why it was I was asking them to do it. And sometimes they couldn't figure out why I was asking them to do it, but they figured it out later, and that was a growth experience. So, Ron? Yeah.
That we're supposed to learn from this as Christians. This is law for the Jews. It never was law for the Christians.
Right. Exactly. And I think that the principle behind the law is important as we try to understand what God is doing. So, but having said that, I really wanted to get all the way through chapter 19 this morning. So let's move on. And if you have more questions, great. I would encourage you to go find some excellent resources and spend some time reading this week. Don't always get necessarily spoon-fed. Do some digging and figure out what it is this is saying. That's how I figured it out. I don't have this all. I'm not an encyclopedia up here. I have to read and study and figure this stuff out. So that's what I'm doing in the week while I'm not teaching. The next thing he talks about is slave girls. This also is a little confusing. He says, if a man lies sexually with a woman who is a slave assigned to another man and not yet ransomed or given her freedom, a distinction shall be made. They shall not be put to death because she was not free, but he shall bring to the entrance of the tent of meeting a ram for a guilt offering, and the priest shall make atonement for him, and the ram with the guilt offering before the Lord that the sin he has committed, he shall be forgiven for the sin that he has committed. The next section is about someone who lies with a slave girl who has been committed to another man, but not yet given her freedom, not yet ransomed. What does that look like? It's nothing that we do in our society at all. There is no parallel between what this is and what we do. There has to be an understanding of what the slavery was. So this is a, I believe this is a teaching that A slave girl. So a slave girl was the property of her master. She was his property. And if a free man wanted that slave girl as his wife, the free man could do that. And there would be a contract drawn up that would say, this slave girl is going to be this man's wife. But for that to happen, she had to have been ransomed. In other words, he had to buy her. He had to buy her for his property. And so either two things could happen. Either the guy, the future husband could buy her, or the master of her then could choose to set her free. But she had to have either been ransomed or set free before she was considered to be a free woman. So that's the case. Here you have a situation where there is a slave girl. She's growing up in a house of her master. She is not his wife. She's not his concubine. She is a in some sense, a daughter, but like a slave. She's his property, a girl slave property. There is a man, a free man, a free Jewish man, and this has to be a Jewish girl, okay, because you can't intermarry. So there's a free Jewish man that's seen her and says, I want her to be my wife. So he or his parents approach the slave owner and say, hey, my son would like your slave girl to be his wife. And there would be an agreement that was made. And there would be a contract that was signed, and it would say, at such and such a day or after such and such a purchase is made, this slave girl becomes this man's, not property, but wife, because she is now ransomed. She's now, in some sense, free. That's what he's talking about when he says, if she's not yet been set free or been ransomed. That's what he's talking about. So in that case, if in the interim, someone comes, another guy comes, and lays with her, in other words, has sexual relations with her, that would typically be a really bad thing. And she would be killed. She'd be stoned. So should the guy, but she should be stoned. There's an exception here. And the exception is, because she is a slave and property, she doesn't have freedom to say no. She's being put in a place where she doesn't have her freedom yet. She basically has to do as a slave. She basically has to do what she's told. And so what the exception here is, in this case, I believe is what's being taught here, she's not going to be put to death. She's not going to be put to death for something that she couldn't have. But she's also not going to be married to the guy who had the contract initially. She is no longer marriable for him. She is now either the property of or the wife of the guy who laid with her. And he has to then bring the price. He has to pay for her, ransom her, and take care of that. So this is a protection for, I believe, a protection for the slave girl, not for the guy who laid with her. I don't think that's what the protection is. He has a price to pay. The price to pay is he has to bring the guilt offering to the temple. She has no price to pay at all, but he does have a price to pay. So I think this is a protection for her. That's what I think. You can think something else. We're moving on. The next thing he talks about are fruit trees. And like I said, see, this is just all a bunch of, it seems like miscellaneous stuff. And I have really tried to make sense of what the flow of thought here is. And I think that the thing that made sense for me so far the most is the flow of thought is especially when we get down to Molech in chapter 20, is the purification of Israel and the holiness of Israel being on display in the land. That's the thing that's tying all of these things together for me. So he says, when you come into the land and plant any kind of fruit tree for food, you shall regard its fruit as forbidden. 3 years it shall be forbidden to you. It must not be eaten. The fourth year, all its fruit shall be holy, an offering of praise to the Lord. But in the fifth year, you made its fruit to increase its yield to you. I am the Lord your God. So you plant a fruit tree, 3 years, you don't eat any fruit off that tree. The fourth year, any fruit from that tree is given to God. You don't eat any fruit. So it's a five-year plan. When you plant a tree, you're waiting 5 years to eat fruit from that tree. That's the layout for what they were to do with their fruit trees. And understand, so wow. So they get in the land, they got nothing to eat. Oop, there it is. My alarm just went off. It worked this week. Stop. They got nothing to eat. So I ignore it just like I do at home. So what are they supposed to eat? The idea here is, again, when they plant a tree, they were going to go into a land that was planted full of trees. And there wasn't a prohibition against eating the trees, I think, that were already there. But the idea is when you plant a tree, so when you plant your new tree, then you've got 4 years of not eating it, and the fifth year you can eat. But there was going to be plenty of food there. One of the things that they were looking forward to in the land was to get into houses they didn't build and eat produce that they didn't plant. That was something that was going to be there for them. So it wasn't mean that they got in the land and all they had was grain, no other good food for the first 5 years. That's not what this indicates here at all. So I guess we'll stop there because it's late. So we'll try to finish up chapter 19 next week and see how far we can get through the book. I really think we're getting close to almost done with Leviticus. So I do appreciate the spirited discussion. I have fun with that. Hopefully my desire is to pique your interest towards studying the Bible, to not view Leviticus as boring. A lot of times we read Leviticus, especially in our Bible reading programs, and it's like, okay, I'm dead. But Leviticus is anything but boring. Anything but boring. So let's pray. Lord, thank you for your word again, and thank you for your desire for holiness in your people, which includes us. I ask that you would take us from here this morning with a desire to be holy as you're holy. We ask this in your name. Amen. Thanks. Good discussion. You're dismissed.